Well, hello, friends, and welcome into the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. I am Chris Welsh, joined by the Athletic's best, Jake Seeley and Brandon Funston, as we are prepping you for the fantasy football season with who you must have. There is no in-between. These are affirmatives. You have to have these, according to Jake Seeley. You have to have these to Brandon Funston. You do anything else, you're fired. Excommunicado, my friends. That is how it goes down. Jake Seeley, all in kid on Twitter. Brandon Funston, same name at the Twitter handle. Jake, how are you coming off of flex leagues and any other of your personal drafts? How has the last week been in draft world for you?
Counterpoint, no.
We didn't get our shirts yet, by the way. We got to get our shirts. We'll get those in soon. We're done with them all, right?
All my drafts are the shirts. Not done with all the drafts. Oh, they're done with all the flex drafts. We're not done with all of the drafts. I actually just finished the IDP one with Jamie Eisenberg that Scott usually helps with, but he sleeps in late. He says I couldn't get any help from him this year, so I hope I did him proud with the IDP. Like, I don't know who these guys are. Like, I mean, I know depth charts in the NFL, but I really do not know every team's third linebacker or fourth safety, and I'm just kind of going through the list hoping I did it right.
The biggest test is always like, do I take this fourth running back or do I take this second linebacker for second, my team?
The thing is, I don't mind playing in some IDP, but like Jamie's got two defensive linemen, three linebackers, three safeties, corners, and then a flex spot for defense. Like, that's too much, man. Like,
that's literally, I play in a 16 team league. Bogman does the same thing. Two defensive linemen, three linebacker, two defensive back and a flex IDP. When you get to adding corners, I get mad. I'm like, let's not do the corner and defensive tackles. Like, let's not do that. We're going too far into it.
I would have no problem if it was 1-2-1 and a flex. Then that's a little bit more interesting. It's too
Much. Well, then because it's kind of minimalized and everything like that. Brandon, how does it go in draft world? Are you best balled out and prepping into home league or any high money leagues? What's the rest of the fantasy football season for you?
Yeah, I haven't had a real draft since the flex drafts. I have four. I have four coming up. I'm about ready to run the gauntlet. And Labor Day and the day after Labor Day are my two biggie home leagues. But been doing a lot of mocks for The Athletic, for apparently Seahawks.com with Scotty Engel. But so I've been getting my reps in, but the real leagues won't start back up until just after this weekend, and then I do four.
What's your favorite draft position? Because everybody always loves to ask that person.
You know what? I'm actually good with any draft position this year. I don't know about you guys, but
oh, you're that talented.
I just think, I don't know. I mean, I think there's good picks all the way through. I'm happy with it. I love actually picking that 12 spot now too. I double tap on the end. I love that.
The big question with your mocks is, did you win though? Did you win the mocks? That's the most important
undefeated
thing.
Undefeated. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know what? Congratulations. It's going to be a great year then. It's going to be a fantastic year built around everything that you guys are doing, prepping for drafts. You guys actually performing in drafts. Comes the must have. Who are the players worded in lots of different ways? Who are your guys? Who are the guys you have the most shares of? That's something you're going to know after the fact. But these are the players that are your stamps. These are the players that you've got to get out of drafts. It's not like a sleeper conversation necessarily. It's whatever capacity they are, who must you guys own? The stamps of approval will be seen on the ranks. And that is what we're going to be talking about. All the
Mahomes, CMC, and Justin Jefferson. I'm done. See you guys later.
I'm not going to name the person, by the way, but I saw this person.
Don't forget Kelsey.
I saw this person get interviewed for this video, and it was like, who's your quarterback of the year? And they were like, Patrick Mahomes. Who's your running back? CMC. And I was like, come on, we can't do fantasy information where we're just talking about the number one player at every single position. Who's your favorite wide receiver, Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase? Like, that's where it gets funny. Yeah, okay, fine. Those could be your guys. That is also why I pared it down to getting your guy for RB1, your guy for RB2, so we can push a little bit about that. But you guys are good about not just giving me the cream of the crop on any single player, Patrick Mahomes. So these are your guys. These are the must-haves from Brandon Funston and Jake Seeley. So let's dip into the whole thing. I do want to remind you, though, if you guys want to get maybe your own look at who are Jake's guys, make sure you're over at The Athletic and sign up today. A couple bucks a month will get you set. You can check out all the articles, the draft prep, the projection sheets, everything that Jake's got going on, and you can peruse through and probably figure out who Jake's guys are. just by going through the list. That thing is updated all the time. It's the best way to get prepped for your fantasy football season, joining with The Athletic. So if you're not already subscribed, do it today. Mr. Jake Seeley, who is your must-have quarterback for 2024?
Yeah, so I'm glad that you said, like, you know, your guys that you have the most shares of, because that's kind of how I treated these lists, is like my guys, most haves, because, you know, we could sit here and just go Patrick Mahomes, Saquon Barkley, and CMC. Like, so at quarterback, this is definitively the person I have the most of. Second closest is Funston's boy, well, his real life boy, Geno Smith. But the number one that I have the most of is Anthony Richardson, because I am willing to go first tier quarterback. I'm willing to go second tier quarterback, but the problem is, it's late third, fourth round for the first tier, and then it's like fifth, sixth for the second tier. And because people as a whole are pushing the quarterback position back up for those top two tiers, I'm generally missing out on those. And then every time I look at Trevor Lawrence or anybody in that tier with it, like Justin Herbert, I'm kind of like, eh, I kind of like the wide receivers and running backs there better. So I just wait and wait and wait. And I keep ending up with Anthony Richardson, because I end up with a quarterback who I'm going to shoot for the upside. We talk about this all the time. I don't want QB 11. I want the person who could finish QB 5 if everything breaks right. But then a lot of times I do end up with Geno Smith as my back pairing with him, who I still think has top 8 upside. But I love getting those two late. And I actually would love to get Brandon's pick. But like again, I think people came around on him, Funston, like to set you up. Is like I think he's deserving to possibly get back into the top 3. But every time somebody takes him, it's usually like the fourth round.
Yeah, this is a higher tier quarterback for you, Brandon.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson. And I'm the same way. I'm willing to get the top tier or the second tier. I just found myself – Lamar Jackson's fallen to me like where he's been two full rounds later than the last of the top of the big three, where I've been in a couple drafts where that's been like, man, that's good value at this point. To Jake's point, you want to take guys that can be top tier guys conceivably, you know, and get them later. And Lamar Jackson's already proven that he can be a top tier guy. It's just a matter of him staying healthy. I don't think we're going to see 5 DMPs a year from him from here on out. And that's really kind of what's been holding him back from being elite. And, you know, they got Todd Monken there, and now they're going to open up the passing game a little bit more. So there's a lot to like there if he can just simply stay healthy. And at the quarterback position, you can kind of bank on that a little bit more. But Lamar Jackson's a little special case because he does run a lot and he does put himself in harm's way. One thing I'll say is the quarterback I have the most of is Deshaun Watson. I don't want to say he's a must-have. I can understand if you don't want to have him on your team. And I just am kind of like to Jake's point where he ends up taking Anthony Richardson. When I get to the point where I've held out for a late quarterback and it's Tua and it's Dak Prescott and it's Anthony Richardson, I'll take Deshaun Watson, because before he took his 2-year hiatus, he was a top 5 quarterback for 3 straight years. And he's still a relatively young quarterback. He's still a dual threat. And he's got some nice weapons to work with there in Cleveland. So I'm willing to roll the dice on that. So, again, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, both guys that, you know, could be top-tier quarterbacks. They have the ceiling for it anyways.
Deshaun Watson, Brandon Funston's most wanted. I will say this, going to Flex League, it actually played out very funny in this entire conversation. I wanted to go mid-tier running back. I wanted to go Lamar or Joe Burrow. Quarterbacks got pushed up there. I think Lauren Carpenter, one of your co-hosts, Jake, took Mahomes, like, might have taken him in the first round at like 10 or maybe on the wheel back, but it was like super high for Patrick Mahomes. And then it was like, it opened up Josh Allen and it opened up Jalen Hurts. So I was like, okay, this happened. And then every guy got placed up. So then I had made the commitment, I'm going to go later. What was my plan? Anthony
Richardson. She took him at 2-4.
Okay, yeah, 2-4. So top, what was that, like 16? Was it the 16th overall pick Mahomes got taken?
Yeah, Lamar went 3-11.
Yeah, so I'm telling you, they got pushed up. I had thought about Lamar, goes in the third round. So then I make the commitment, all right, I'm taking a later quarterback.
Sorry.
I wanted Anthony Richardson, but Anthony Richardson ended up, I think, going quarterback 8 or 9 because Tua was still on the board, Dak was on the board, Deshaun Watson was 9 on the board. 9, so there you go. So what did I do? I waited out the whole thing. I did a double pairing, and I took Dak and Tua together in like the 13th or 14th round.
Yeah, I like
boom.
That.
Yeah, so I paired those two guys together when I missed out on it, even though I wanted Richardson. So if I were to answer this, it's probably Tua, even though I do have Dak in a lot of places, because Dak is falling. I know he's getting kind of boring and people, you know, assuming there's a lot of upside in other spots. I love pairing him with somebody. And the best case scenario off of Anthony Richardson to me was Tua. Because I think Tua has top five quarterback upside with his weapons. There's just major injury problems. So if I were answering this, it would have been Tua. But it played out exactly on sides in the flex leagues of I wanted a high-end quarterback. I wanted Lamar. Didn't work because I went so high. I wanted Richardson, but everybody else wants him just like Jake as well. So he's getting pushed up into a top 10. So those are must-haves. Anthony Richardson, Lamar Jackson. Let's go to running backs. And this is going to take a little bit longer because we're going to play RB1s, 2s, and 3s. Brandon, why don't we start with you? Your must-have RB1 this year.
Jake took my guy. So I had to pivot to Tony Pollard, who was number 7 RB in half PPR last year. If you look at the top 19 scorers at RB last year, he had the fewest touches of the top 19, and he finished number 7. So you have to go all the way down to number 20 to have fewer touches than Tony Pollard. He had 25 running back touchdowns in Dallas last year. Even with regression, there's still it's still a ripe offense. We don't know if it's Rico Dowdle, Deuce Vaughn, Malik Davis, Ronald Jones. I mean, there is not a clear number 2. And so, yes, somebody's going to step up, but not in a role that's equivalent to what Ezekiel Elliott took last year. This is going to be it should be a much bigger role for Tony Pollard this year. And so, look, I think number 7 RB probably is floor.
And you guys, it's funny because both of you have paired my two favorite running backs that you very much could. I'm a running back type of guy. You could do these two together, but you're going to have to probably have a mid pick to get one and hope everybody else is not quite as high, because Tony Pollard, I'm very high on, but I'm also high on your RB1, Jake, who I think we all love here.
Oh, we all do. And actually, speaking of that draft that I just did, I got Nick Chubb in the 2nd round. I took Tyreek Hill. I was at pick 9. I got Tyreek Hill, and I was like, you know what? Because there's Chubb, and then there's a few. Like, I didn't even willing to do Derrick Henry, but like there were some others. Tony Pollard was still there. I was like, you know what? I have a feeling one of them will be there for my 2nd pick. And surprisingly, the one of the 3 that I really wanted was Nick Chubb. For everybody that's so worried about PPR, even if you play full point PPR, he's still 6th in points per game last year, and this is now with no Kareem Hunt. No answer really behind him still. We're like sitting here assuming it's Jerome Ford, who's a little bit banged up. Nobody's really taken a step forward of Demetri Felton or anybody. Anthony Schwartz trying to get mixed in, and that didn't happen. There's just a giant question mark behind him, where it's like, if he's just what he was last year, he's still RB6, and now he has a ceiling for even more with no Kareem Hunt and what we expect to be a better offense than what that nastiness was since Deshaun. That, if you actually look at it, Nick Chubb, 1 rushing touchdown with Deshaun Watson at quarterback. So if you take the part before he even had Deshaun Watson at quarterback and repeat that, he would have been in conversation for the 1 or 2 running back in all of fantasy. So if he gets back to somewhat what he was before Watson, I think you're looking at another repeat top 5 performance. And again, you mentioned it. He keeps going in the 2nd round.
I almost would have taken these 2 exact players in flex, except in flex, Cooper Kupp fell to 8, and I got Cooper Kupp.
He's just like, yeah.
And I want it. I have Tony Pollard very high, but Kupp was higher, and Tony Pollard fell to me in the 2nd round. So I started Cooper Kupp, Tony Pollard, which couldn't have been better. If Cooper Kupp had gone, I would have gone Nick Chubb and Tony Pollard. Actually, assuming that people want Nick Chubb a little bit over Pollard, and even though I have Pollard at 3 on my RBs, love these two. I'm very committed with both of you guys. So let's go over to RB2. Jake Seeley, your must-have RB2 that you have now paired with Nick Chubb is who?
And somebody that could be an RB1, Damian Pierce. So there's so many things, even going back to last year. Like last year, Damian Pierce coming out of college was like, well, they never gave him a ton of touches. So what does that mean? And then he comes in, best talent in that backfield, took a little while to take over. And then people are like, well, the concern is, what is he going to do in the passing game? And even with that, Damian Pierce last year, 39 in the passing game, 30 receptions last year. Not being the starter for the entire year, getting yanked off the field, terrible offense. And follow what these teams are telling you. We were watching this preseason, and I admittedly even said this myself when they signed Singletary of like, ugh, well, there goes the hope of Pierce being more. But if you watch the preseason, it's been Devin Singletary's the backup plan. He's not the pass catcher. He's not the pass catching option to be on the field 30, 35, 40% of the time. He's backup plan if Pierce gets hurt, because Ogunbowale has been like the pass catcher. And Pierce in week 2 of the preseason didn't come off the field for 3rd downs. He was out there. So if you're telling me Damian Pierce could already do what he did last year, the offense will be better with CJ Stroud under quarterback or under center. The offensive line is still one of the better, at least mid-pack of the league, and people don't realize that because it's the Houston Texans. and you're going to give Damian Pierce 250 plus touches because you're not going to take him off the field? Like, why aren't more people not on Damian Pierce? I feel like this is insane. He already averaged 13 points per game last year.
Brennan, weren't you making a... Yeah, you were big Damian Pierce last year. Have you fallen off of a Damian Pierce train? Are you disinterested, or do you buy that he is just a completely undervalued RB right now?
I still like Damian Pierce a lot. It's the surrounding stuff that gives me pause a little bit. But like the talent, awesome. The team, terrible. But like the advanced metrics and like what he is able to get just on his own, he's elite. You know, he's a bulldozer. So I like him. I think he can be involved. I do think Devin Singletary will mix in, but I don't think it'll be, you know, meaningfully crushing to Pierce's fantasy value. So I'm with Jake on that. But I would have picked my guy regardless because I'm all in on team Aaron Jones for sure.
Yeah, you know, so here's something funny real quick because I wanted to break this down. But on my show, my In This League show, every Friday we do mock drafts. And we're at like 10, and we do all different types of formats. So we actually just did a flex mock draft too, Jake, which was fun. And for a fun piece to have conversation, we do set it up with the Fantasy Pros like draft analyzer, and it'll tell you like people that love your draft. And I'm just realizing this, probably four of the last seven, Brandon Funston, you have been one of the top five people that have loved my draft. And I'm like, oh, it's really, I don't even realize like why Brandon always likes my draft. It's because I didn't realize how much we like the same players. All three of your running backs on this list are three of the five that I would have pinpointed, and Jake has two of the three. Like, I'm very much in with you guys, and I love Aaron Jones this year. And Aaron Jones actually might be one of the reasons why you consistently love my draft. So talk him up, my friend, because I'm with you.
Yeah, well, so, you know, you're getting an RB2 value guy that's going RB15 in NFFC drafts in the last couple weeks. Like, I look at guys like Travis Etienne and Jahmyr Gibbs and probably Joe Mixon, who I would take Aaron Jones over. But you don't have to, because those guys are often already gone before I even have to consider, you know, who I want there. I love Aaron Jones because sometimes I go wide receiver every once in a while in a draft, and I can take Aaron Jones as my first running back pick, and he goes RB2 and ADP, but he's delivered four straight RB1 seasons. He's been top 12 four straight seasons. Workload should be great. He's been durable. He's averaged one DMP over those last four seasons. And the guy, 1,000 career carries, 5+ yards per carry, puts him in the company of four other guys in NFL history. Barry Sanders, Gale Sayers, Nick Chubb, and Jamal Charles. Like, that's pretty impressive. And, you know, I think there's, because he's been somewhat like not been a full-on bell cow, I think because he's 28, you don't have to worry about him, you know, in the mileage as much as you do some of the other guys that hit the 28, 29. But, you know, with Jordan Love there, a lot of the narrative talk is that they're going to lean on that backfield a little bit more. I'm all for it, but give me Aaron Jones.
So RB3, again, if I am blueprinting RBs that I'm targeting, you guys have hit a lot of them. And Jake, your RB3, I probably actually would have assumed this guy because I would have assumed the RB3 that Brandon has is a little bit more of an RB2. But you've got Khalil Herbert as your RB3 must have, and it's getting a little bit more muddied because of the Roshan Johnson conversation and how he's going to be used, but it's tough to deny who Khalil Herbert is as a runner. So why did you throw him in as your must have?
Because I would actually disagree, and I think it's actually become clearer, and it's become clearer that they have Herbert as the clear number one on this team. And this was never going to be a backfield that was going to see a ton of targets going to the running backs. Yes, Roshan Johnson, better pass catcher, better pass blocker, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, I'm saying this a million times. I said on so many podcasts and articles at this point that Khalil Herbert's pass blocking grade last year was better than Dalvin Cook, Aaron Jones, Christian McCaffrey, Joe Mixon. I can go down the list. It's a ton of RB1s. And I'm not saying that Khalil Herbert deserves to be in the conversation of these RB1s for fantasy, but pass blocking is not everything. Like, yes, we want to see them out there for more third downs, was the argument of Damian Pierce, why I like him. And we would love to see more. But I keep going back to Mark Ingram next to Lamar Jackson. I don't need you use. And he was. He had three receiving touchdowns that year, but he only had 200 carries. And if you just take his rushing that year, he was a top 15 running back because of the rushing upside and the touchdown equity. Of course, it can go sideways, which Mark Ingram was an RB1, so maybe it's only an RB2. But the point being, is Khalil Herbert should still be an RB2, still in this conversation, even if he cedes a lot of the passing game work to Rashawn Johnson, because he's the lead running back in the backfield. So the biggest part of why I love him as an RB3, because there's a lot of places, as Funston knows, he did a mock draft, and we did the Athletic mock draft, like, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, and Funston took him like the 11th, and I was like, wait, I just had crossed Herbert off, assuming I missed that he went, just because of how ridiculous it's become. He's been going as an RB4 in most drafts.
It's wild. He is firmly outside of the top 30 of RBs, and he is just one of those values. He's just a great get, and I love exactly what you said. When you can get him also as like an RB4, you probably have our dear friend Joe Pizzapia, when he talks about relative position value, he kind of chops players up more about how they start, like RB1, RB2. Like Khalil Herbert is like the top. I can't think of a top tier RB4 you could have than Khalil Herbert. He's at the tippy top and pretty high as an RB3 as well. So we finish off the must-haves, Brandon, with the guy that we've talked a lot about on this show in the offseason. He was the guy I told you I wrote up in the Athletic guide that's out there. I didn't do a whole lot in that guide, so I talk about the few things I did. But I'm completely with you on Rashad White as your must-have RB3.
Yeah, and it could be another terrible situation. But this is volume. This is all volume. I just looked at Jake's projections for Rashad White, projecting for 287 touches. The worst fantasy running back last season with at least 280 touches was Najee Harris, and he was RB12. Now, I went and checked out Mike Clay's projections. He's a little bit more modest. He had him at 261 touches. The worst running back last year with 260-plus touches was Alvin Kamara, RB18. So it's really a sort of a – it's a volume can't fail situation. You think what you want about Rashad White. And I think he's a great receiver and a decent runner, not elite, but the situation's tough. But if he's going to get 260 plus touches, that's going to be top 20 most likely. And to get him mid 20s right now, depending on where you look, he's 24, 25. So I'm kind of fudging here. He's definitely a bubble RB back end RB2 guy. But I think he, with his volume, he's going to be right in the middle of the RB2 class.
Yeah, and he's in like a mush of a lot of players as well. So like mush. You can make the justice. Yeah, they're just like a bunch of guys, you know. It's like there's a lot of questions around them. A glob, as we would sometimes use in like the pitcher glob of fantasy baseball. There's a glob of running backs that kind of sit in that could move between, you know, being 18 and 28. And you can play a volume play with Rashad White. I very, very much like him. So let's move over to the wide receivers. Must have wide receivers. These are some newer names. A few of these guys we've talked about, plenty we haven't. So, Jake, let's start with you. Your must-have wide receiver one for 2024.
It's Amon-Ra St. Brown. I didn't think it was going to be, because after we left last year with the excitement over his rookie season and what he's doing in the offense with Jared Goff and blah, 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 and all this type of stuff, and it was like, I thought it was going to be off Amon-Ra St. Brown because people are going to put him inside the top five. And that's what people are having these conversations of, like, top five. And he's so great. And he's going to the next Cooper Kupp. How many times did we hear that last year? He was the next Cooper. He's Jared Goff's new Cooper Kupp. Interestingly enough, if you look at his target percentage of routes, so route target percentage, like the amount of times he runs a route and gets targeted, it is only behind Tyreek Hill. And then the other two names, they had 30 and 32 targets of LaVisca Chenault and Jamal Agnew. So you just throw those guys out the window. He's essentially number two behind Tyreek Hill, just in front of Davante Adams and Cooper Kupp and Drake London. Over 30% of the time he runs a route, he gets targeted. And now Jameson Williams is suspended again. And, well, I guess out again, suspended, now out again for multiple weeks. He's going to start the season at probably around the midpoint. I don't understand why people don't have more excitement for Amon-Ra St. Brown. It feels like maybe people got too overly tired of it, of hearing his name, but he went from being in this conversation with like Davante Adams and the next Cooper Kupp and Tyreek Hill, and all of a sudden people are just like, meh, whatever, I'll take CeeDee Lamb. I'm like, why? Amon-Ra St. Brown, man.
That's a good point. I want to say I'm maybe indifferent. I think I see the value. I don't see insane downside.
A lot of people are like indifferent to him all of a sudden.
And I think to your point, it's probably incorrect. I think part of it has come from that offense. But the more that you do break it down, Jameson Williams definitely plays a role in it. But you're gone for 6 weeks. You're also dealing with injury stuff. They don't have Hockenson, which is a thing that works in his favor. But then you got Gibbs, who might be working more at the backfield. I'm not sure.
Now we're having a conversation of the number two option on this team being Marvin Jones, deceased corpse, Josh Reynolds, and Sam Laporta, a rookie.
Yeah, no, no, and I'm just talking about it live on air. Like, you can build an upside, and then you can immediately build like a small downside. There's not enough downsides to outweigh him being a top 10 wide receiver, really, yeah, in any capacity.
By the way, is deceased corpse redundant? I feel like
it has to be. Well,
yeah.
I mean, a corpse implies death, so that would be redundant, Jake.
Rotting corpse. Exactly. That would have been better.
yeah. That would be exactly. But Amon-Ra St. Brown, definitely one of these picks in there. That where do you have him?
I think I have him at six, seven. He's in the same. But this is the thing. He's in the same tier as Stephon Diggs and Tyreek Hill for me.
Okay, and
He says it's him.
That's the newest.
No, you're saying, well, you started saying sex because you were combining seven together.
Well, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then there's sacks. It's like a kind of sexy. Well, take this, and I'm stealing from Brandon announcing
it. Counterpoint,
Stephon Diggs, because that is the wide receiver one that Brandon has to have. But my thing before Brandon jumps into Jake was, you know, Stephon Diggs dealing with some of that weird stuff in the offseason, some of the crybaby stuff that's going on. Any of those questions overall, something that you just say, screw it. You know, if Gabe Davis is taking a next step, they bring in Dalton Kincaid to essentially be a slot wide receiver. You know, you look at these elements and you go, there's still massive upside for Diggs, but maybe it's capped where an Amon-Ra St. Brown doesn't really have a ceiling anymore. That I'm getting at, like, can you justify taking him over Stephon Diggs, Amon-Ra?
He's the one guy that outside the top five receivers, because my point with Stephon Diggs is you're getting him often outside the top five receivers. Sometimes he's number five, but he has number one receiver upside. If I told you Justin Jefferson was going to have 113 catches, 1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns, you'd be like, yeah, sounds about right. But that's been Stephon Diggs's average in Buffalo. That's been his average for three seasons. And so that's kind of what you're putting down. And you mentioned Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis is never going to be a target hog. He's kind of a vertical threat who's going to get, you know, his plays. I'm going to worry about a rookie tight end, you know, even if he's a hybrid guy. They don't throw to the backfield hardly at all. They're one of the smarter teams when it comes to realizing that the pass to the running back is not a high upside play in the NFL anymore. And so Stephon Diggs can continue to be the target hog and one of the best offenses in the league. So I like Stephon Diggs. Especially if I'm sitting like somewhere between 8 to 12 in a draft, I get a guy at wide receiver that I feel like could be as good as any of the wide receivers that went before him. And you usually get to pair him right away with a really good running back because you're getting the back to backs there. So I've ended up doing that a lot where, okay, I didn't get the top receiver. I'm going to go Diggs here and running back on the quick comeback and, you know, get a guy like there as well. So I'm not worried about the off the field stuff. It's a lot less of worrisome than actual guys that are holding out like Josh Jacobs and Jonathan Taylor.
So Amon-Ra St. Brown, Stephon Diggs, wide receiver ones that are must haves. Brandon, let's just kick it right back to you. Your wide receiver two makes a lot of sense if you think about some of the players that you've been constructing here and one of the quarterbacks you talked about. So your wide receiver two is who?
Yeah, I'm just going to assume that Deshaun Watson is going to look a little bit more like he did before his hiatus than he did in his return last year. And so Amari Cooper, who was wide receiver last season, who is seventh best wide receiver in PPR points over the last five seasons, who is 29 years old. Remember, he was one of those guys that was young early. It was like the Juju Smith-Schuster where he was always a little bit younger than you thought. So he's played a decent amount, but he's 29 years old. So still in his prime, still the lead guy. You know, there's not super strong number two, you know, guys that are taking away from him. Elijah Moore, I like. David Njoku, I like. Donovan Peoples-Jones, I like, but they're not there so far in Cooper's alpha rearview mirror, in my opinion, that I think we're going to see more of the same.
Jake, wide receiver two must have. This is an interesting name compared to Amari Cooper because this guy's kind of floating up and down, but maybe recent injuries have cleared this up a little bit. Your must have wide receiver two is?
Yeah, he's become more of a must-have since we got the injury to Treylon Burks. You look at DeAndre Hopkins and go back to last year.
Oh, my favorite player. Love him. This is another guy from me.
By the way, for 9 games for Cooper Kupp and 9 games for DeAndre Hopkins, 98 targets, 96 targets. 75 receptions, 64 for Hopkins, 8-12, 7-17 for Hopkins. He's just behind Cooper. Now, granted, Cooper Kupp missed a lot more of his ninth game than Hopkins did. But all that being said, he's also playing for that Kyler Murray offense, which wasn't Kyler Murray for the entire time. But if you look at until that last game, even including the last game, all those double-digit targets time after time after time, double-digit points in every single game except for that very last game. And he's going to what we assume is a healthy quarterback situation. If people are coming around or making arguments for Ryan Tannehill, which we've had that discussion on the show before, people are more optimistic on Tannehill for fantasy than I am. But he's the number one for Tannehill, and Tannehill will use one wide receiver. The question comes down to using a second. So if you're telling me the team target percentage, the target percentage for Hopkins, granted, I get the risk. He's 31. He's been hurt the past 2 years. But as a wide receiver, too, who was ninth in fantasy points per game last year, ninth. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I didn't think I was going to get a lot of Hopkins, but it turned really quickly because of the situation.
Yeah, oh, by the way, I think suspension was last year, right? So he wasn't even hurt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. No, because week 16 he got banged up. Okay. And then he missed the final week or two, right? I'm almost positive. Positive.
Yeah that's
he right. out. He didn't play the last game or two.
Jake, these are not against your ranks, but let me ask you this from a consensus rank standpoint. Two guys that are above Hopkins are Chris Godwin and Deebo Samuel. Do you believe Hopkins is a tier above those players or belongs in that grouping?
They are both in the tier behind that for me. Hopkins is in a tier with like Christian Watson, Amari Cooper, who Funston just said, Devonta Smith, Calvin Ridley, those kind of names. I think once you talk about Godwin, I think Godwin is quarterback immune, but it's still like Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield is not trash, utter trash. Part of it, like I've brought this up before. It's a victim of his own hype coming out of college and how good he was as a rookie. But can he be league average? Sure. But I'm not saying that means it's going to be Godwin. Like Godwin's been QB immune because he's so good at getting open in space. But what happens? What if Baker Mayfield just targets Evans 25% of the time and Hopkins 17%? Like that's in the realm of possibilities. So that's my only concern about it, and is like the touchdown scoring opportunities for Godwin. I love Godwin. I just don't think you can put him in the same conversation because of that team.
Yeah, that's kind of where I thought we were going to go with that when you're talking about Hopkins.
Like, part of the reason before, I'm not even sure Baker starts the entire year is not even for his play. It's just that offensive line might get him murdered. Like he might be hurt by week 8.
Yeah, and then you're depending on Trask, and it's like, what level are you going to become? I mean, that actually might work better, for Godwin, you know, just throwing
some
inside.
Some people might say it might be Malik Willis at some point, and that's the counterpoint to DeAndre Hopkins, who's outplaying Will Levis so far.
And that would be a concern overall. Quarterback play is something to consider off of that. What did you say last week? You're silly, like, who could be a quarterback one Ryan Tannehill nonsense? Like, not Malik Willis and not Will Levis. Those guys are not going to be there. All right, let's finish it off on the wide receivers with your must-have wide receiver three. Brandon, who must you have to fill out your wide receiver core?
Brandon Cooks. He's ADP wide receiver 40. I love that. Last year he was wide receiver 49 with Davis Mills, basically the worst team in the NFL. Davis Mills at quarterback, and he missed 4 games, and he was wide receiver 49. In Houston the year before that, without Deshaun Watson, he was receiver 20. I mean, he's been a 1,000-yard receiver for 4 different teams. Going to Dallas, I expect he had a good chance to be in, you know, making his 5th team. He's a good quarterback, and Dak Prescott. You got CeeDee Lamb you're working off of. He's just been a good player everywhere he's gone, and other than that concussion year in LA and last year in the, you know, Travis Shemakery that was Houston, and the fact that he got banged up, he's been really good in fantasy. Travis Shemakery. yeah, and again, 29 years old, so not even as old as probably some people think. Still under 30 and in a good situation, much better than it's been the last couple of years in Houston.
Would you trust going on his plane and flying as he's flying? Did you see that video of him flying?
No.
Yeah, like I think
he's a flyer. He's a flyer.
Yeah, he's a flyer.
I only fly commercial. Too many. That's just how too many people go in this. Too many
here it
people
is.
Go and these little Cessna, you know, those little Cessna.
And that's what he had. He had a private, he has his own private licensed pilot, and he took Micah Parsons and Stephon Gilmore on a flight around Seattle for their preseason game. So do you love him enough to jump on that plane and him to be your pilot?
I'm just gonna say no to that. Just yeah, I'm gonna say fantasy. No. I'm not as a pilot.
Yeah, wide receiver three, not pilot one. Jake, how are you gonna finish off your wide receiver core with your must-have wide receiver three?
With somebody that I will throw a caveat on, and that people be forewarned that this could get out of hand by the time you draft, if you haven't drafted yet. Jahan Dotson. I have not stopped talking about Jahan Dotson this entire offseason, and the issue here is now Terry McLaurin just got banged up last night. As of us recording this podcast, the x-rays are negative. They expect them back by week one, but by far, I'm not the only person talking about Jahan Dotson now come August. Like, there was a time where it was like, hey, a few of us, like Funston, me, I think Matt Harmon, because he did his reception percentage. There was like, oh, like, there's a few people talking about Dotson. And then kept talking about him. I did my bold prediction saying he could be a top 10 wide receiver, and this is how. And people are jumping on the bandwagon. And for good reason. I'm not coming for people in the industry jumping on the bandwagon. It's like, this is what happens. And why I'm saying, I'm not taking this so much of this time to be a proponent of Dotson, because I've said so much about Dotson at this point. You can read the article. I'm out of it. Like, I have nothing left to say besides the fact he legitimately has easy top 20 upside and could finish as a wide receiver one. But don't get caught into the, oh, I have to get this guy. He's Jake's guy. Funston loves him too. Welsh loves him too. Like, oh, I got to get him. And then you draft him in the fifth round. And then where's the upside there? Like, you know, maybe he finishes as a fourth rounder, but you've kind of ruined it. You there still is risk that Howell bombs, even though I love Sam Howell as well. There's a risk that this off. Yeah, no, there's a risk that the entire offense falls apart. Howell gets hurt. Jacoby Brissett comes in, and all of a sudden the A-dot is 2 yards. Like, there's a lot of problems that could go wrong where just don't get so hung up that you have to get Dotson, even though I truly believe he has top 10 upside.
Always a great point. It's funny because we're doing the must haves, and there's that part of the conversation that's get your guys. You know, we're talking must guys and my guys and get your guys, and don't worry sometimes about value. But you do want to pay attention to eating into the offensive upside of a player and what they can provide you on the top end versus their floor. And, right. And you know, guys in the fifth, sixth round, they haven't really built a floor because they're going in that range that justifies them going in the third round, or we'd be taking them in the third round. And you just want to make sure you're having that proper math between what their floor looks like and where their upside is. And mm-hmm. each round you go higher and higher, you're kind of eating into that. It's something we talk about all the time. Yeah. And
I have him as a fifth rounder right now, just in front of Keenan Allen. And that's because I think Keenan Allen's the floor, Dotson's the upside.
So, I mean, that, and that's like a mid wide receiver.
About as high as you can find. Yeah, this is about as high as you can find.
Yeah, and you also would have to have that argument, too, of like how much more upside is there outside of mid-RB2, right. Or wide receiver right. 2, I'm sorry. You could maybe get to wide receiver 1 territory, but you are pushing it. So taking him in front of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like a 15, 14 wide receiver that's just completely blank. Right. Like taking him in front of like Devontae Smith.
I was going to say the tier that's right in front of us. So we talked about Metcalf, Smith, Ridley, Cooper, Hopkins. Like that's where you need to kind of pause.
Yeah. Finishing it up here, the guys that you must have, tight end, a little bit dicey this year. Do you go the high end? Do you wait at the end? Travis Kelce, do you just do that? You got to invest your first round. So let's do it. Jake, who's your must have tight end? This will probably speak to the level of investment you have in tight end, who that player is.
That's more what it is. Although I do have a lot of Funston's pick, and people keep asking me, why do I keep doing it? So I'll let him explain it. But if I don't end up with said player, there's one that I have second most, and it's Tyler Higbee. And it's not like I think like Higbee's the greatest tight end ever, but Higbee is the number two for the Rams. Like, we're doing Van Jefferson, Ben Skoranek, their rookie Puka Nacua, all these options. Like, oh, we're really going to Tutu Atwell. Yeah, woo. No, we just had the answer. He had 105, 6, 7, 8, somewhere around there, targets last year. And then a lot of them came without Matthew Stafford. And everybody I know was sitting there in their minds probably thinking, if you didn't look, if you just sat here and assumed, the easy assumption would be, well, that happened because Cooper Kupp got hurt. Ha-ha, my friend. Most of his targets actually came with Cooper Kupp on the field. He was actually better in those first 8 games than he was at the second half of the season. Now, of course, some of that's Matthew Stafford, too. But my point being is Cooper Kupp being healthy does not hurt Tyler Higbee. It actually helps Tyler Higbee. So another 105, 110 targets coming from a healthy Matthew Stafford, which that's the biggest question. Stafford's got a lot of injuries, especially a back problem creeping up at this point of his career. But I'm getting Higbee after Njoku's, after Komet's. I mean, he's going like 15, 16, 17 at tight end. I'm like, fine, I'll do it because I got a top 10 guy who was just top 10 last year.
100%. And we've talked about this before. Who's the clear number two on that team? Yeah. There isn't. It's Cooper Kupp and then a bunch of guys who can get targets. They're going to throw the ball, and likely Tyler Higbee is going to play a big role in that. So when I mentioned that the guy that you pick for this probably is more representative of your investment. Brandon, you have a bigger name. And actually, I'm kind of shocked that it's this name, because this tight end is surrounded by a lot of offensive weapons, and it's not a pass-heavy team. But your tight end that you must have is?
Yeah, well, it's not the – he's been surrounded by offensive weapons for a while. I mean, George Kittle is a guy who's going as tight end five. And it's so funny how much farther ahead Mark Andrews will go than him. If you look at these guys in their last 4 years, like on a per game basis, Kittle's outdone him three out of the 5 or 4 years, last 5 years. I mean, they're basically the same player. And if it wasn't for the Kittle's missing half of a season right in the middle of that stretch, I think he's been, you know, much more maligned in fantasy as being a injury worry that Mark Andrews has. Every other season, and they're about the same. They miss one or two games, but Kittle has every bit the upside that Mark Andrews does. And yet the discrepancy, you know, Andrews will go off the board sometime in the second round, and you can sometimes get Kittle 3 rounds, 4 rounds later. It's crazy. There'll be just like this pause after Kelce and Andrews, and people will just wait. And then Hockenson, who I don't even think Kittle should be going behind Hockenson, but Hockenson will go. And then in ADP, Waller's going ahead. I mean, if you want to talk about injury risk, give me a break. So I just think that it's the last tight end I really care about. And sometimes I'm getting him so late, and I'm legitimately getting him. I have him on a lot of teams so far that I just can't pass that up. I'm like, hey, I think he could be every bit as good as Mark Andrews.
So to recap, must have players: Anthony Richardson, Lamar Jackson. Running backs: Nick Chubb, Damian Pierce, Khalil Herbert, Tony Pollard, Aaron Jones, Rashad White. You're looking at wide receivers. You got Amon-Ra St. Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Jahan Dotson, Stephon Diggs, Cooper, Brandon Cooks, and of course at tight end, Higbee and George Kittle. Those are must-have players. Gentlemen, one thing I didn't do at the top, I just want to get your quick take on this. It's been my failure because we've been so heavy draft focus that sometimes I forget to get into in-season mode of news. The two biggest pieces of news has surrounded some running backs. I just want to get your take on this because I'm going to pair them against each other, with Josh Jacobs ending his holdout and coming back to camp, and the Colts allowing Jonathan Taylor to seek a trade. Your investment for this year, Jake: Jonathan Taylor with the trade looming versus Josh Jacobs and his return and whatever usage that is. Who do you want to make your investment in now?
The same. I have shares of Jacobs. I still have zero of Taylor. I honestly am terrified of what's going to happen with Taylor. Like, he's ticked. He doesn't want to be with this team anymore. And Ursae's not helping the problem. Just keep your mouth shut, dude. What the hell are we still doing? Just
Ursae is
up.
A
stop,
time
stop,
bomb. He's a ticking
commenting
time bomb
on these things. Like, but the problem here is like I feel like they're going to both play. My only thing with Taylor is, does he play from week one, and does he play 100%? Because he's also got the injury. Like, and whether or not these nagging injuries are his reason for not practicing, even though he could, it's just so much more cloudiness. Like, my opinion of Jacobs the entire time was he's in a risk tier. I put him outside the top 9-ish running backs, and I said, because there's still a risk, he could dig his heels in like Le'Veon Bell. But I didn't think it was going to happen because of the money and because it's his job. The Taylor one, I legitimately could see Taylor still sitting out week one, because it feels like an olive branch of, go ahead and seek out a trade, but we need a first rounder for you, which basically means you're not going anywhere, buddy. So that's my concern with Taylor. So Taylor would have to be in the third round, and I think somebody's always willing to risk it before he gets there.
Yeah, Brandon, do you feel any different? I mean, the looming, where the hell would Taylor go? Like, the looming trade stuff has been more worrisome of whatever's going to go forward with Jacobs, even though he's agreed to kind of like in the holdout here. Are you firmly Jacobs over Taylor now?
I am, because, you know, the talk now is he's going to be back before the season starts. Here's the thing. Neither of these running backs have leverage in the fact that they're floating the idea that they need two first rounders for Jonathan Taylor. And then the team that gives that up would then have to pay him. He's not going to even get one first rounder. I mean, most teams wouldn't even just take him with the idea that they'd have to pay him. That's where running backs are at right now.
True.
It's a massive joke. It's a massive joke. And so, like, this narrative that, we're going to wait and find out who's going to step up for Taylor. No one's going to. And at some point, the reality is going to hit the agent and hit Jonathan Taylor, and they're going to have to try to, you know, save some pride somehow and probably end up back in with the Colts.
I feel like a team like the Dolphins, they love to trade picks. They might be someone that maybe goes a call in, but we're getting pretty late in the game here.
Won't
for
be
this
a first
to be...
rounder. Because when a first round pick on a running back, you get that guy for 5 years of control at a very reasonable price.
But the, there's also a report out there that had said something along the lines of, it's not a first rounder, it's got to be something that is a similar-ish package, which is implying like a second rounder this year, maybe a second rounder next
year,
a second
players?
This year, and a third.
How about just players?
Well, but a team like the Dolphins, you, in theory, they could move a chain if they wanted, to deplete that. They could send over a Jeffrey Wilson and then another young player. I mean, there are options out there. I think the Dolphins make sense, but the cloudiness is what has made him even worse now, and Josh Jacobs has kind of moved up. You want to make sure you're following all the latest. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast and over at The Athletic. Get a subscription today, a couple bucks a month. Get access to all the latest stories, all the latest ranks from Jake, and everything to get you prepped. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. We're going to get a little bit more news preseason oriented in the next episode as we prep for in season. So we will talk to you then. For Brandon and Jake, I'm Welsh. Have a great one, friends. Bye-bye.